Thank you, John. Well, good evening, everybody. I'm so glad that you joined us, and I'm glad that we were able to join you. I was going to actually speak to you about a different topic tonight, and it's kind of been mulling over in my mind all day, but about, I don't know, half an hour ago, the Lord just plunked what he wanted to address tonight in my heart. And so I'm really excited because I really know that this message is so very important for all of us. There are a lot of things that are in transition right now in the church, in the Jewish community, in the temporal world. It seems like everything has been thrust into transition. I can remember when the Lord first started speaking to me so powerfully. He wasn't speaking to me the way he had in times past, but there was a whole new level of the prophetic that I was plunged into, and it transpired as a result of several visitations, which I will not go into. But after the last visitation, it was as though a time clock had been put in my heart, in my soul, and it had begun to tick and would be the clock that not only I, but the church and the world would go by for the rest of our time on earth. It wasn't that God was not in control before. It was that he had placed all of us into a new season, a season that was on a time clock. So this was back in 88 or 89, I think it was 89. He had begun speaking to me in dreams and visions within just a few months, really, of getting saved. And he was also appearing to me very much during those days. And so I was aware, acutely aware, of many things that you can't be aware of, really, if you're not living by the wisdom and the understanding of God. And I was too young to be doing that at my tender years of salvation. But he had set my compass, you might say, as to where I was to go, how I was to go, when I was to go. And even though it seemed like every contradiction in the world would come against me at that time, I knew just instinctively, intuitively, I knew I had to keep walking the path that was set before me, even if I only knew the next step to take. Then, of course, in 88 and 89, 90, I was having so many visitations from angels and from the Lord about world events. Now, before that, I would minister and speak prophetically on the nations, but not like I was being given to do at this season of my life. In fact, when he began to give me understanding of nations, he almost dried up the prophetic over people. And, you know, back then I was learning that God works in seasons. He develops one thing in you, then he'll kind of close that down a little bit and start working on developing something new. And at a heightened place, he'd do the same thing with that one that he did with the last one. And so he'd tone it down a little bit and then start working on something new. So when this new season opened, I was so excited. I loved to talk about it because I knew that the body was hungry. The body was so hungry to hear what God was going to do. And when I would feel them just drinking in these truths that I was trying to give, I found that if I would just say it like I saw the Lord do, or like I saw, you know, a particular angel do, or, you know, like Zechariah would be picked up and taken into what looks like some kind of orchard. And so he's in the vision now. He's not watching it anymore. He's in it. And I've had plenty of those experiences. But people loved hearing that God was speaking today. And pastors would tell me, you know, there aren't many prophets in America, just a very, very small handful. And when you come and you bring the prophetic, life, I feel life come into my church. It's like people are awakened that have never been awakened before, you know, the couch potatoes would take off their glasses and really sit up and start paying attention. And there was the other too. I can remember giving the whole message of prepare for the winds of change in a Canadian church, pretty good sized church. And after the service was over, an older man came up to me. Now this was many years ago. An older man came up to me and said, Missy. And I turned and I said, yes. And he said, do you really expect us to believe all that junk? And I was so shocked. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to respond to him. I was totally shocked. And I said to him, well, maybe not expect. Maybe hope would be a better word. Because if people can hear what's coming, they can start preparing for it today instead of falling into the pit when everything explodes, not knowing what they're supposed to do. But if you don't feel like you can accept what I delivered at this church, Jesus still loves you, and he has his own way of reaching you. So I'm not discontent. He just kind of shook his head and walked off. I found by that time that there were three virtues of the Lord. You might want to get your paper and pen out. Three virtues of the Lord. I've written about them all a lot. Three virtues of the Lord that you must set your sights for. Now, this isn't as fun as setting your sights to be used in the gift of healing. But it is more important than even the nine spiritual gifts, as important as they are. These three things are the things that you can set your sights on, set your hopes on, set your energies on, set your prayers on. And the Lord will talk to you. He will lead you. He will give you understanding of situations you couldn't have any other way. He will move heaven and earth for you. If you will learn these three lessons, if you will incorporate these three virtues into your life, it's not difficult. It's really quite easy. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to be tried beyond what you think you should have to be. In some cases, you won't know until the trial is over what he was trying to do through that. But I can promise you, and I'll just make it quick here, I can promise you that if you will let your life quest be for these three things, the Lord will move heaven and earth for you as he sees that you're serious in winning the prize. What are the three things? Love. I can remember taking a trip to India, and one of the things that trip was supposed to have built into it was the privilege of meeting a very high prophet, higher than the prophets in America. This man would spend 20 hours a day in the spirit, lost to everyone but the Lord or angels or saints. His days connected to the things of this earth were very limited. It almost reminds you of an Enoch. And so I couldn't believe that I was going to be able to meet with this man. I wanted him to tell me anything that he saw in me that was wrong and to give me any encouragement that the Lord would give him, because I don't get a lot of that. I don't get a lot of encouragement because the Lord doesn't want my life built on that. He wants my life built on faith. But when the encouragement comes, oh boy, does it mean so much. So I met with this man, and I knew what the Lord had spoken to me. And you can maybe draw a picture of a tree with no leaves, just a trunk and branches. And for years, he had been teaching and training me, building in me, because this really is something he has to do. We must cooperate. If we don't, we'll never make it. But in the end, the work has to be, the deep work that we can't see has to be done only by his spirit. So I said to him, if you were to list a virtue that would make a walk with God, a seeking of the deeper life of Christ, which virtue would you say was the most important? He didn't even think. He just said it. Humility. And I think my eyes kind of glazed over, but not because I was dumbfounded, but because I knew I was really sitting in the presence of a man who knew God. Humility. You can't love with divine love agape, without humility. You can't obey without humility. You may obey, but there's going to come a point when you're going to trip. Unless you keep hammering into your soul the will to follow Christ in humility. And you know, he will let us do that. He will let us even fall. David was standing on his roof while the rest of the military might was out fighting battles for Israel. And he sees the young lady, Bathsheba, taking a bath. And I'm thinking, David, get away from there and quit looking. I mean, whether she was married or whether she wasn't married is irrelevant, right? He was being tempted and tried. And when he least expected it, because God had given him victory every place he went, he didn't even see in connection with himself the potential of failure. And there he is, feasting on someone that didn't belong to him, and really someone that he had no right to be looking at, king or no king. God was testing him. He fell. We know the story. We all know the story. We've all hurt with David over the story. I'm sure we've all hurt with God over the story. But I'll never forget when the Lord said to me, this was years and years ago when I was taking a walk in Omaha, Nebraska, where I was living at the time. He said to me, I will let my great ones fail. Because for some, the only way that they will reach the high pinnacles of God is through the door of failure. The self-righteousness has to be broken. And there are those that it will only lose its grip through unbelievable failure. And I'll let it happen out of love. That's why the story of the prodigal is in the Bible. I could have stopped that boy from taking his inheritance and wasting it. But he wouldn't have learned the lessons he needed to learn. Once he returned home, he was mine, the Lord said. And for those that I allow to be tempted, tested, or taken through deep, deep trials, I'm teaching them first and foremost to love humility over all things. Out of humility will come love. You cannot have agape love without humility. It's not possible. And out of love will come 100% obedience. Most people in the church would be very fortunate to find out when they get to heaven that they only fail to obey 20% of the time, when it could have been 90% of the time. They could have lost the way 70 or 80% of the time. But they failed to walk the path that he had for them, far less than what they perceived that it would be. Obedience is so important. And, you know, it's not like the Lord is standing there saying, come over here, I want to whop you alongside of the head. And then he looks at you and says, shaking his finger. Obey. Learn to obey. He doesn't do that. If he would do something like that, it's because you are really off track and you need that strong correction from him. For the most part, he wants to encourage you. He wants to help you through those difficult nights, those difficult hours, weeks, months, maybe years. He wants to bring us through to understand his ways, which you not only have to understand, but you have to be willing to embrace them even when you don't understand. That's what helps build an obedient heart. Jesus himself learned obedience through the things that he suffered. Not that he didn't know how to obey, but maybe another word could be that he experienced the powers of obedience through the things that he suffered. It takes humility. Let me read you a passage. It's one of my favorite scriptures. He has showed thee the Amplified Bible reads, O man, what is good? What is good, and what doth the Lord require of thee? But to do justly and to have mercy. You know, you don't need mercy until someone has failed you. And if you haven't learned mercy before that failure, you're going to find you're having a very, very rough time. And to walk humbly with thy God. There's no safer place to walk with God but in the path, power, presence, heart dedicated to humility. I was sitting next to a minister who has a deep hunger for God, like I do. And we were sitting there side by side. He had ministered in that service, came and sat down with me, and the pastor of the church got up and he said, every word that this man spoke is fake. It's not true. I reject his message and I encourage you to do the same thing. I looked at the man sitting next to me. I wanted to know what he was doing and how he was responding to what was going on. He had his head bowed, his eyes closed, his hands in the posture of prayer. And the Lord let me feel his heart. He had gone to a place so deep inside himself that it was a place of such humility. I've never experienced that before, where the Lord has allowed me to literally experience a person's depth of humility. When he raised his head, when the pastor finished and he raised his head, I said, are you going to be all right? He said, I will now. And I apologized to him for what had happened. But I'll never forget the humility. I'll never forget it. He could have sat there building up 100 walls. But he didn't. He bowed fast and he bowed low. And that's what it takes to walk with the Lord. You can't, I mean, it becomes a very serious problem if you're finding out a year after a trial or a crisis whether or not you passed and whether or not the Lord was pleased, how much he was pleased, if he was pleased at all. This is a day where you have to walk that path day by day. When things don't go the way you anticipate them to go and you can't understand it, sometimes you just have to drink from the fountain of humility and choose to trust. When it feels like the devil is taking everything away from you that matters to you in the least, and the harder you press into God, the more Satan seems to want to fight you, you have no choice but to bow your knees and your head in humility. Divinely wrought humility is the most beautiful place. Once I was still in Omaha, and I was in prayer when the Lord came into the room on the other side of the room, standing next to a wall. And he said, "Nita, get up and come over here." So I got up and I walked to him, and he said, "Kneel down." I knelt down. He said, "I'm going to put my hands on your head. I don't want you to pull away." So he did. And the immediate thing that I began to experience was all of my human, whether it was goodness or whether it was weakness, whether it was outright unrevealed sin, whatever made up who I was inside, began to go down, down, down from my head to my shoulders to my torso and eventually out my feet. His hands still on my head, he began to fill me, not with human humility, but divine humility. And in this place, it doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, what you're going through. You don't think about whether God might be being unfair. In fact, you can get kicked around, even on a human level. And the Bible says that divine graces and virtue all brought together, working and operating together. Prudence ignores an insult. Why does prudence ignore an insult? Because humility dictates it. That doesn't mean he didn't hear the insult. It didn't mean that he didn't feel the pain of the insult. Sometimes it will protect you from the pain. But even when it doesn't, it's a different kind of reality. Because you're wrought in humility, your eyes are set upon Christ. When he finished filling me with all these virtues, I was just in awe. And I looked at him, and his blue eyes were like liquid love. And he said, would you like to know what I'm teaching you?" I said, "Very much." So the first thing he did was to fill me with the knowledge of whose spirit had gone before me on this path. And I bet you wouldn't know. But it was the Apostle Paul. Jesus said to me, this is what the Apostle Paul walked in nearing the end of his life. He didn't care where I had him as long as he could be near me. He didn't care what things transpired because he was in obedience. He didn't count his life dear to himself. He had died to all of that. Because he did, this is what I gave him. What you're experiencing right now, this was his heart. And it was through and through, my dear brothers and sisters. I don't care what anybody says. Unless they have been standing before the Lord and he is allowing them to experience something such as I was experiencing, the rest is just all guesswork. So he dropped into my understanding two places in Africa. He told me the city and the country that it was connected to. And he said to me, would you be willing to go here to take my gospel? And I started to respond to him, but he said, just a moment. I want you to know, before you say yes or no, that you're going into a situation where you will potentially experience much persecution, possibly bodily harm. Perhaps even death. Are you still willing to go? And all I could say to him is, Jesus, it would bring me so much joy to be where you want me to be. I don't care about the suffering of being in that place. As long as I can please you, that's all that matters. And he backed up a little bit, took his hands off my head, and he said, he smiled and he said, well said, my daughter. And he was gone. The main virtue that I was feeling emanating from my innermost being was humility and love. And the humility and the love I knew would be the graces that would carry me through, enabling me to go to these places where my life might be in danger. You just don't care when you're walking in divine humility. You know, some just love the sport of it. I'm not like that. I've never loved the sport of mission work, but I go and I'm pulled to go out of the love of Christ. And I go and I meet the people and I love them with his love. And I know if something were to happen to take my life while I am there, then what I've given to the Lord as an earthly sacrifice is well pleasing to him. And I'm fine with that. And as long as I can tell my soul that you will stay in this place, I walk in a marvelous strength, an amazing strength, a fearless strength that you wouldn't typically expect a woman to walk through. We really like to rely on those men in our circles who seem to have that intuitively. But when you're walking in humility, nothing is impossible to you. You would never deliberately hurt someone because love doesn't do that. But you will give of yourself sacrificially and not even consider the cost, because you know you're not giving to Christ, to the person as much as you're giving to Christ, or the circumstance as much as you're giving to Christ. You're living every day learning how to please him more. And that's all that matters. When that isn't all that matters, then you need to get on your knees and find out what has entered into your heart that is starting to harden your heart. If the husband comes home or the wife comes home, and the next thing you know, you're in a battle over something you did that day that the Lord asked you to do in such a way you would have no doubt that you were being obedient to him, you can walk away from that battleground and say, why? Why doesn't this person just trust me? Why do I go out and I do God's work and I come back to this? You don't want to go there. That's not humility. But you go into the room where you can be alone. You humble your heart. You raise your hands. Say, Jesus, for you. And you pray for that mate that has been unkind to you. For you, Lord. My heart is filled with joy. For you. There's so much I could say tonight. I could spend hours on this subject. But I think I've said enough. We need to get into prayer. When you're praying for someone, or you're praying, for instance, for our government, I would talk Christians into praying for Obama. And you know, so many Christians didn't even want to hear the man's name. Many Christians just hated him. And I understand that. But early on, I asked the Lord, how do you feel about Obama? How do you see him? Put in my heart the reality of the Son for Obama. He gave me several dreams, which I won't go into. It would take too long. And in those dreams, he literally let me experience the nature and character of Obama. He showed me how he really felt about America, not what people are saying and what his programming is trying to make happen through him. But the part of his heart only Jesus knew. He showed me everything he could show me about Obama, to know how to pray for him and how to lead others in prayer for him. And when he was finished, he filled me with his love for that man. I've tried to share this story at the gatherings and share the story about what I saw in Obama. And then I had someone pull up a window of a picture of Obama. And he looked so arrogant, so proud, like he wasn't going to let anything hurt him. And I'm talking to the people at the gathering, and I'm looking at the picture, when the picture suddenly changes. And what I see is a man who is grieving deep levels of pain in his heart. I shook my head, looked at it again. It's still there. So I turned around and I said to the gathering, "Do you see what I'm seeing? Is this the proud, arrogant, angry Obama that we just looked at? How many of you see a different Obama? Someone tell me what you see." I mean, people all over the place are raising their hands. And what they were seeing was the same thing I was seeing. His face had totally changed before all of our eyes. And I like that because I wanted them to really love him enough to pray for him. Not to judge him, but to pray for him. I needed that so badly myself. I didn't want to live the next 4 or 8 years in judgment toward this man. I wanted to love him with the love of Christ and pray for his soul. I can see him standing next to Hillary, standing next to Bill Clinton, standing next to the Queen of England. But I'm always drawn to Obama, and my heart is filled with joy over this man. I feel so much love for him, and I'm so thankful. So in that area, God has done a work in my heart of humility, not to judge someone else's walk, Christian or non-Christian, but to love the people that are making the most mistakes because they need it. Now, when you're dealing with someone like Hillary, who has become reprobate, the Lord took that love for Hillary out of my heart and put in my heart an endurance because she's reprobate. He told me at that very moment, this woman will never see heaven. That was very hard to hear. But Obama still has a choice, an opportunity. And we need to pray for President Trump and his family with that same love. He makes mistakes, but deep inside, the man has a good heart. The Lord has shown it to me. And he loves America because God has put his love for America in Trump's heart. And he's given him the courage to keep pressing forward. The faith to believe when all the obstacles are against him. And because we pray for him, we know when those times happen so that we can pray for him right then and there. Ask the Lord to enable you to do that if you don't do it already. So humility. Humility will show you the path you have to walk to be in the wholeness of Christ. If you don't have glasses of humility on, you'll miss the path. And you'll keep missing it until you finally decide to bow the knee. If you miss in love, bow the knee. I had a friend that was going through a very hard time with her husband, and she was telling me about their latest argument and the things that he was saying. And I thought, oh, brother, this poor woman. And then she said, I think I'm just going to leave him. And I said, wait a minute. That isn't what this is about. What are you going to learn that you need to learn more than you need the peace you're craving? Hit the dust and stay on your face until your proud heart is broken and all that's left is a pool of humility and long suffering for this husband of yours. Well, I could talk to her like that because she knew that I loved her. And she knew I wanted this for her as much as she wanted it. So I'm going to close up on this for tonight. I don't know if we'll walk back into the room of the three virtues or not. But I pray that you'll take what I've given you. And remember that if you want authority in the kingdom, you will humble yourself. Because until you're as humble as he needs you to be, he will not give you the authority you are crying to walk in. Let's pray.